So we just started. It's page 248 in Horev. It's essay number 50. Falsehood, lying, flattery, and hypocrisy. Isser Dibur Sheker, Hanufa, and Ganevas Das. And the reason we got here, why are we learning about this? Because we said that love of others requires feeling that your life would be incomplete, maybe even yourself would be incomplete without the other. And that's very beautiful and inspiring, but a little hard to know how to do that. Like, how do you see in other people? So I gave a personal example, but I think that the deepest thing I've ever seen to help understand that is really something based in this chapter on falsehood, lying, flattery, and hypocrisy. And the clue to bring us here was that speech is something, it's a communication between two people. If you think about what is speech, speech allows you to transfer thoughts from one brain to another. That's what speech does, right? You take a thought that's in your brain, send it into somebody else's brain. So you have speech as a way of speaking to a very deep part of the other person. It's a way of touching the very deep part of the other person, and then for them to understand you and you to understand them. There's something there about speech that helps to build this bridge between people, but it doesn't by itself answer the question, well, how do you see other people as being so necessary for you? And to do that, we came over here to the Dea and the Dibor, to this, well, specifically, obviously, Dibor. These are all halachas about Dibor. Isser Dibor Sheker, Chanufa, and Ganevas Das. So already it's intriguing, right? Like, what's the connection between Ganevas Das? I mean, because it's kind of lie, I guess. But you can see already there that there's a connection between the Dea and the Dibor there as well. This is not for now. I just brought these in case you want to. This is a little bit more about that difference between cortical blindness and it's not a detailed one. It's like an extremely, extremely superficial introduction to the concept. It's pretty much what I said. I just found this very quickly from Scientific American, and it's not very long, and it's not very detailed. It does have a little test built in. You can try and find your own blind spot if you want. So that's fun. There's no Torah there. You can bring it wherever you want to, and wherever you have time. There's lots more interesting articles and books and things on this topic, but just in case you were like just so interested in the beginning. Yeah. No, you have to move it back and forth. It tells you, like, start this far away and which way to look, and then as you move it back and forth, all of a sudden you could see it disappear.
And then when I find my blind spot the other day, that other person, what's going to happen?
You'll have... So that's... that. No, it's a good introduction to this, meaning there's things you could know because somebody told it to you, and you read it in a book, right? Or you figured it out logically. And there's things that you know because you experienced it. So let's say you find your blind spot, okay, and you see that actually that's really weird. Anything that you put, if you close one eye and you put something into a certain spot at a certain distance from your eye, okay, you actually can't see it. It has to be small enough to fit inside the blind spot at that distance. Because if it sticks out around the edges, your brain fills it in the middle. It's pretty good at knowing what it ought to be. And it's hard to hide from your own brain that you're about to look at something, right? Like, meantime, it already took a picture, so it already knows kind of what's going on. So, but if you can look at something and have it be smaller than the total blind spot within that field of vision, and you close one eye, because the two blind spots are not in the same spot, right? So you got to hide one of them altogether so that your other eye isn't cheating. Then you can make things disappear or appear within the blind spot. Once you've done that, you know something about yourself that nobody has to explain. It wouldn't matter how much anybody argued with you that it isn't such a thing, because what do you mean? Like, there is such a thing. How do you know? You did it. So you saw. So you know something about yourself, which is, I'll give you another thing, we all sit in our own blind spot. Why is it important to know about a blind spot? Because each of us sits in our own blind spot. Physically, it's very hard to see, like, my own face, right? I can see, like, bits of it, but not much. And spiritually, I'm in my own blind spot. I mean, because there's such a thing as a blind spot, I'm able to understand that even if my vision is as good as it can be, I might need there to be other information. Is Rabbi Bernstein maybe looking for somebody? No, that's okay. I grew up with throw up every single always looking through the window. Yeah, we had a whole tune to go along with it. Are you kidding?
You too.
Of course.
We had a tune.
Just
if anyone noticed, throw up every single
What's the tune? That's chicken.
Yeah, it's so smart.
What is it?
You'll have to come up with your own tune.
Is it words or just a song?
No, it's just a little sound so that people would be warned not to act up in the throw up every single window. We had square windows.
Can we give
a 10? We were in the other building. We had square windows. Okay. I'm so much less nervous as an adult.
There's a class next door, that's
fine. So
like,
they need somebody to check, that's for sure. Okay. So I know something, though, now about myself, which is I could have a situation where there's things about myself that I can't see that other people will be able to see better than me. If I want to know how I'm really doing, it might not be such a terrible idea to ask somebody who can see me how I'm doing, right? Like, it's really hard. My mind has a bias towards myself. It's not something I heard a shiur from Rav Leichter. Rav Reuven Leichter is shiur about tshuva, and he's a very direct-spoken Baal Musar. So he says, so this person came over to him. He says, this is a person, anyone who knows him even slightly knows this man has a serious anger problem. This is not a small problem. This is something very obvious to everyone. This man came over to him once in Elul and said that he had, and told Rav Leichter he made a Kabbalah, like going to Elul, he's going to wear a hat when he says Asher Yatzar. Right? So Rav Leichter's like, hey, right, like, that's absurd. That's absurd. That's like, maybe not a frumkeit, like a krumkeit. It's like twisted. Like, hello? Like, that's what you're working on? Really?
It's twisted?
Of course it's twisted. Who does he think he is? He thinks that the area in which he needs to grow and develop is he should have more respect, like, standing, he should have a greater awareness when he's saying Asher Yatzar that he's standing in front of the... Really? What about when he's standing in front of his wife? Or his kids? Or his employees? Like, he has no respect for the people around him. How's he going to develop respect for the Rosh Hashanah? It works the other way, right? I'm afraid I didn't look this up in advance. It's a Mishnah Navos, right? Yehei Mora Ravcha Kamar Shemaim, right? You should have the respect for your Rav should be like, am I backwards? Yeah. Or am I backwards?
No, you're right.
It goes like the opposite. Like, you have to...
The Rav, the cover for your friend should be like a Rav. Or for a Rav should be like Hashem. And then,
yeah, so that... Something like off with that, right? Because we can... The only way we learn is from our actual direct experiences. Not the only way we learn. But the beginning way that we learn. The beginning of how we learn is through direct experiences. This is actually what we're going to be talking about over here. That's why it's not like a tangent. Like, I'm, you know... The way that we learn... Well, how does a baby learn? This is one of the great secrets, so I don't know, like... I'm not sure how much is known about how babies learn, and I'm not sure I know what the Torah says about how babies learn. But I can tell you the little bit that I know about how babies learn. Okay, think about it. What happens? A baby's born. So let's assume that's the fresh start. It's not exactly, because baby could hear before it's born. Baby could see before it's born. Maybe not a lot to see, and what it hears is maybe muffled, right? But it can, you know, if it's brighter or it's darker, it could tell. Could hear some things coming in. So it's not really a fresh new slate the second it's born. There's already been some stuff going on. Okay, but let's imagine that's the starting, certainly the starting point in this part of the world, in this stage of their life, right? And now there's like this mommy looking down at them and loving them and making noise and say, oh, you're so beautiful, Baruch Hashem, right? Maybe make a bracha. Does it know that that's its mother? Does it know that's a person? Does it know what a person is? What does it know? So you have this whole nervous system and all the senses with essentially no experience. And from the first moment, there are impressions that are coming in and they get correlated. Okay, so you hear a noise and little by little, after a little while, this baby's brain is going to figure out that when it hears noises, like that there's a directionality. And that could be, right? You can compare from both ears, where you're hearing something, you can look for a sound. It doesn't take so long for babies to learn to do that because they can start hearing already before that. Okay? But you have to use it in order to develop that ability. They open their eyes, there's just like a lot of... How would that have meaning? That I'm seeing a bookcase or... But like all those things are meanings to the colors that are being represented in my eyeballs. Like how... But how do you know what the meaning is going to be, right? So that has to happen over a period of time and learning. Babies are, Rav Orlovich says, babies are learning machines. It's the most incredible thing to watch a baby because they start from basically zero. And no, you can't tell a baby, you know, pay attention to everything because you have a lot to learn and like want you to learn language and want you to be able to talk. It has to figure out to learn. It, Baruch Hashem, you know, everyone is given what they need. Babies are given the drive to learn. They just soak it up and learn and figure out. Because you can't explain that to them. That's what they do. So maybe they notice, you know, maybe they notice contrast more. Maybe they notice something gets bigger and smaller. There's dark things, there's light things, and that's an edge. And eventually they start to notice that there's a connection between something they see and something they feel on their hand and the inside feeling of their muscles and things moving. And they start to learn that, like, they have hand, they could move around and that has an effect. It hits something, it moves something, it makes a noise. Even that, right? It's not, babies aren't born knowing that if they bat at a toy, it will move or make a noise. It's something they learn. That's why these toys are actually, in fact, educational, right? When you put little toys in a toy, babies are learning from it, right? Now, you have to also give them things to see beyond that vision. And beyond that distance, they have to sometimes look at things that are farther and closer, and they have to get on their stomach so that they can like learn how to look at things from the front. And there's so much they have to learn to do. And there's physical things they have to learn to do. They have to learn how to roll over and to sit up and to stand. And they have to do it by trying it. They have to fall down and fall down and fall down and fall down to be able to walk. And there's nothing, we don't think there's anything wrong with that, right? That is the foundational way that human beings learn. Is from experiencing stuff. And as you experience it, you add it to what you've already experienced and you know more and more. Okay, so now we're going to come back to where we were. Let's start at the beginning of paragraph 369. God, who created man to be just, which by the way, that is like a loaded phrase right there. Like, wait, so why did Hashem create people to be just? Okay, I don't even know, really. I don't know where to start with that. I haven't researched this. I don't know. What does that mean? Created us to be just? That's what we're here for? I don't know. But okay. That is to say, so now he's going to define just, to leave and give to all entities in all their relations that which is their due. Hard to know what that means also. I have a piece that I think relates to that, which we'll get to, Mitzvah Shem, but I'm not sure the wholeness of this. Has also endowed the mind, because meaning this is the tool now that he provides in order to be able to do what we just said, which is to recognize things in relation to other things and to provide and to give them what is due them. That's to be just. So he has endowed his mind, Hashem has endowed the human being's mind with the faculty, the ability, of mirroring the reality of things. So the mind, the brain, mirrors the reality of things in their various relations. So if you want to know what the world is like, what you actually go to for reference is your brain. And what your brain tells you the world is like, how it mirrors reality to you. As I said, we're in our own blind spot, so knowing that we have blind spots is important for knowing how to correctly fill in the areas that we cannot turn to our own brains reliably for. But right now we're just talking about what you can do. So that man may be able to perceive the entities, entities I think here would be like brios, other created things, and their relations, meaning how they are related to one another. Remember I said that my belief is that with babies, the way that I say they start learning, it's we. We all start as babies. Like, the way we begin learning is by perceiving entities and their relations. I think that's something he's telling us here. This is the fundamental building block of learning, is identifying boundaries, identities, where one thing begins and the other one ends. That's perceiving entities, okay? That's my mommy or my daddy, right? Even if they don't know what that is. At the beginning, it's just recognizing, oh, the eyes go with the nose, goes with the mouth, goes with that sound that she's saying. It ends over there. Everything else, that's the background. That's not part of her. There's a difference between me and my mother. Like how a baby has to learn to identify its own boundaries and borders in order to understand where it leaves off and the rest of the world begins, right? That comes through tangible, like, interaction. So all of this is one piece, and the other is their relations, meaning what are things as compared with each other? Those awful test questions. Compare and contrast. That's actually how we learn. Okay, it's comparing and contrasting. Where there's contrast, I understand there's a difference of identity. Can I compare? Then I can learn from the things that are the same. I can see what's there. Rav Huttner says about twins. He says, what's the idea of twins? I think he says it about Yaakov and Esav. Why does it matter that they're twins? What the concept of twins is, twins can also not be identical, but the concept of twins is that they're very, very, very the same. That they're born at the same time, they're growing up in the same environment, to the same parents, in the same stage of their life, in the same place in the family. Because siblings don't really grow up all the same way, even with, you know, in one family. But twins, as much as possible, are the same. Maybe they even look the same. So when it comes to twins, the Torah is calling our attention to the fact that it is important to look closely and find what is different. The concept of twins isn't that they're the same. The concept of twins is that people are different. And that you can't just look at the surface and see, oh, everything looks the same, therefore it's the same. Because of course people aren't the same. So when the Torah talks about twins, it's telling us, don't look at the surface. You need to look more carefully and see how they're different. Okay? So comparing and contrasting, really, perceiving entities and their relations are the foundation of how we learn. And on the strength of this knowledge, so the better you get at identifying what in the world, how to identify, Torah puts a lot of attention, the Gemara. It's a Gemara. That, what is it other than perceiving entities and their relations, practically? Right? What is this called? If the Torah says this word, does it mean this or it means the next thing? Or does it mean a different thing? What exactly is the Torah talking about when it says that? What exactly is the halacha about that thing? Right? What if it's in this situation or that situation? Now we have a relationship. Well, it's this or it's that. Then it's changed. Okay? It's so important to get the right label onto things. It's so important to know what's the difference and where does this begin and where does this end? Because that's how we learn. On the strength of this knowledge, give to them what the teachings of justice lay down as their right. How do I know who to give respect to? I have to be able to tell the difference. All these things I have to distinguish. This is how I'm going to know how I'm supposed to behave. For the moment, we could say, because I don't really understand exactly what is the chashivos here of the justice. So let's say to know the halacha, to know how I'm supposed to act. That would be a good enough working, I think, definition for the moment that is hopefully in alignment with whatever I will discover justice is about. This reproduction of reality in the mind is truth. Whoa. Yeah, that's scary, right? What do you mean? It's a reproduction in the mind.
Right.
How could it be the actual truth? Okay. So that's why I actually took you this part. Okay. So pass these around. Because it's desperate. It's desperate. Reproduction of the mind is the truth. And isn't there an objective outside truth, right? Like how?
What's a reproduction of what?
In your mind, there's a reproduction of reality. Meaning, it's he called it like a mirror image. Like, not mirror image as in flipped, but it mirrors it. I mean, there's some image in your mind of this pencil. Because the thing you're seeing is an image your mind projects and provides to your frontal cortex, to your conscious awareness about pencils. The pencil's over here and you're over there. So how do you know this thing about the pencil? I mean, you know from experience, you've held pencils. Maybe you've used pencils. But you also are seeing reflections of light that are coming into your eyes that have bounced off the pencil, right? And those reflections go into your pupil and they fall upon the rods and cones, which activate. And each one of those rods and cones cells is a nerve cell, and it sends out a little electrical signal into your optic nerve. I mean, Baruch Hashem, not everyone's does, but yours does. Okay? And then all this bit of information goes inside to your head, looking like this, okay, upside down, because your the shape of the lens of your eye is curved, so the image gets flipped as it falls. But that's okay.
It's upside down?
First no, you see it
compared to the image in the back of your eyeball, yeah.
You see it upside down.
Because did you ever like did you ever have like a cup of water and you like stuck something in back and it was the other way? Or like you look into a spoon?
Yeah,
on Shabbos when you're like you're sitting at the table waiting for something to happen, look inside your spoon. And try it on the back, try it on the front, you'll be surprised at the wacky things that can happen. You know, you ever like have like a silver pitcher in front of you and you go like this? And your reflection goes the opposite way. And
that's
like,
because the way
how is that possible?
That's because you see things.
No, it's because the curve of the thing is diverting the light in a different direction. So you're like moving this way. And in a normal mirror, your reflection would move this way. And you go like this, and all of a sudden it moves off that way.
Why?
Oh, come on. Somebody's had this happen to them, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Why is it a question of why is it considered true?
No, so.
It's fact. Why is it not? What you see,
well,
that's what the fact is.
Well, let's say a person has a cloudy lens on their eye. That happens, called cataracts. Most people, when they get old, have more or less cataracts, unless they have cataract surgery to remove it, okay? Stuff builds up inside the lens of the eye, and it gets cloudy, and it's hard to see. So they might look at this pencil and see that it has, like, a camouflage pattern, like it's all speckled, because it's blurry, or it's, like, cluttered
up. They're, like, it's like partially blind power.
Well, isn't that the truth? But isn't it the, how do they know if it's truth or not?
Because the person who has perfect eyesight, that's truth. Why would it not be
I don't truth? Know. Someone might have more perfect eyesight than you. Like, I don't know. Can you read what it says over here? Like, and what if it's facing this? Like, you only have the piece of it that's gone into your mind. He says it is truth.
What's
your question is, so what's the question? Okay, so the question, I think what the question is... Wait a minute, but I appreciate the fact that I don't know everything about the world. So things that I see, yeah, things that I see, and I understand them as best as I'm able, but there must be more truth than just what's in my little head. I was going to say, wait a minute, what's in my head, that's the truth, but maybe all the truth I know about this is because I looked at it this way, and if I would look at the other side, I'd realize it says stuff on the other side, and I didn't even know that.
Well, the one half of it is true.
So you're saying, so the bit that I do know, that is a bit of the truth, right?
That can be
but
false.
There is the, I don't know, what if the what if you saw it in the dark? You understand, the halacha, when can you daven, or when can you put, I'm not so good at these halachas anymore, I only know they exist because I was helping my kids study Mishnayos when his daddy was away. So, okay, when can you start davening? There's different opinions in the Mishnah.
Mishayakir,
right? It's called Mishayakir. What's Mishayakir? It means from when you can recognize. What does it mean, Mishayakir? It's between blue and green, let's say. Or there's other things. It's can you recognize a friend in the street, the distance? When it's dark outside, you actually can't. And here's like a cool thing. When it's dark, you can't see color. Everything is black and white. A little bit, you fill in because you know what color things are. But if it's never happened to you that you got dressed, well, you can't. You ever, like now, you girls, like your older girls, you wear tights and maybe never happened to you, they had two pairs of the same shoes. I used to have a pair of shoes in blue and they were so comfortable, I got the same shoes in brown. And one time I went to an appointment and I looked down at my feet and I was wearing one brown shoe and one blue shoe. I got dressed and it wasn't so light yet. In the winter, it's often dark in the morning. I was wearing a right shoe and a left shoe, two different colors. That's like an embarrassing moment, even.
Yeah. But they weren't
even the same shoe.
But they were totally different.
It must have been the same height. Okay, but that's that she didn't see it at all. But I'm saying I could see the shoe, but it's the wrong one. Or if you're wearing socks, you could take two socks that aren't exactly the same color and easily not realize that you put on two different socks if it's not very bright. Okay, so there's information that you're just plain missing. Right? And some of it you fill in automatically, mostly correctly, but sometimes incorrectly. We make assumptions. That's, I mean, it's useful. It's helpful. It keeps things running quickly. But we have to realize that, like, a lot of times the things that we think we know, we find out afterward that we were wrong about it. That happens. So I think that's Ruchami's question. So wait, so how can you say then that the reproduction of reality in the mind is truth if so often we find out we were wrong? Okay. I do not have the full explanation for this, but let's take a look at this really, I think, extremely interesting. Okay, this is Rav Hirsch commentary on Bereishis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Tes. So the pasuk is Vayitzar Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayas ha'sodeh ve'eis kol of ha'shamayim ve'yavei el ha'adam liros ma yikra lo ve'chol asher yikra lo ha'adam nefesh chaya hu shmo. Okay? An interesting thing. It's not the one that people give the most of our Torahs about for some reason. Embracious. It's really awesome. Okay, so I'm going to start on the right-hand side of the page, which is page 66, a few lines down into the commentary. There's a sentence where there's a line where the last word is the. It's the beginning of a sentence, the. That's maybe like 10 lines down, something like that.
To the left of the arrow thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did I give you the arrow on it?
Yeah, so. Right here.
Arrow,
yeah, this is
that. Oh, I didn't put this arrow on. Yeah, okay, so you found the that. Okay. The position in the verse of the term nefesh chaya. Oh, I forgot to look up apposition. I know what that means.
Yeah, I have a dictionary.
You have a dictionary? Yeah. Okay, look it up. I've looked it up in the past, not from this source, but it's not opposition. It's like the opposite. It's like comparatively in. It's not opposed to. It's like the opposite of opposed to. It's like, yeah, yeah. It's like the opposite. Okay, apposition. I think it's in relation, in comparative relation.
A grammatical construction to which a noun or noun equivalent is followed by another that explains it.
So okay, that's a typical use of the word apposition, but that's a grammatical use of it, but it's not only a grammatical use. What it means is, it's not opposite. Meaning, when you compare it, remember we were talking about compare and contrast, so here it's where you understand something better against the background of something else, through comparison.
Like foils?
It could be, yeah. I have to look it up. I'll look it up when I have time to get back to it. I'm sorry to
describe
Adam
as an Adam.
Yes, exactly. And that's why he's partly going to come to help explain that over here. So that was earlier on. At the creation of man, when it said Vayitzer with the two yuds, yeah, it says Vayihi ha'adam. Oh, we have it here. I brought it here, right? Did I bring it over here? Oh, maybe I didn't. I brought the Rashi on it, Lenefesh Chaya, right? And Rashi said, Af Behema V'Chaya Nikru'u Nefesh Chaya, right here, okay? So it's very puzzling. It's like this whole big climactic moment in Bereishis that Hashem created the human being as a Nefesh Chaya, and that he gave him Dea and Dibur and speech, Vayipach Be'apav Nishmas Chayim, okay? So I saw elsewhere that Rav Hirsch explains. He says, no, it's exactly for that reason. This is where the apposition comes in. That they're both called Nefesh Chaya. It's like the twins. So then what is the difference? What it's calling to you together is that there's so much that's the same. That's in order that you should notice what is different. The Nefesh Chaya is an individual creation that is alive. The way animals were brought into creation as individual living creatures was through asio. It says vayas in Bereishis, in the process of the Bereishis. And with Adam, it's vayipach be'apov nishmas chayim, vayhi ha'adam lenefesh chaya. How did the human, it's not saying that it's a nefesh chaya, like that's the, it's saying these are all living creatures. It's true, I mean, there's people who will say that just by demonstrating that to you, it's like if you agree to that, then you must believe in evolution or something, right? Like you're a living creature, obviously they're a living creature, right? And obviously I'm a living creature. And if I would ignore the fact that there are things about me that are kind of similar to the way animals are, then I would be missing out on a lot of helpful information, including like how to heal people when they're sick. Okay, it helps if you practice on something that's not a human being first. Okay, but the Torah is specifically coming to show us how it's different. The process of creating animals was asiya. Asiya, remember, is the fully formed, materialized. Man was created, vayitzer, through a process of Hashem putting in nishmas chayim. That's how we became an individual. So now, the next thing that happens is Hashem brings the animals to Adam so he could see what's the difference. Okay? Because how do we learn about things? Through perceiving identities and their relations. So Hashem brought them all before him. And now he's got to figure them out. He's got to understand them. And what did he find out? By the way, I didn't bring it over here. Here. Ula Adam lo matza ezer kenegdo. He didn't find one like him. He looked at all the animals. He didn't find one like him. By the way, after this comes the Chet in Gan Eden. And at the end of that, Adam names Chava. This is the beginning of something that's much bigger than just a little selection of psukim that you might pull out in the Dvar Torah, like about, so there they were, and there was the Nachash, and there was the tree, and she ate, and then all of a sudden Hashem says, okay, it's Arur and Arura, and all these things are going to happen, and then all of a sudden Adam says, my wife is Chava, she's Im Kol Chai. Right, Rav Hirsch points out over there, he doesn't call her Chaya, he calls her Chava. Chava is like the word Yechavedas. She's not just giving birth to babies. It's the whole difference. What makes a nefesh chaya, right? I'm a human being. Oh, my wife is not a mommy animal. My wife is a mommy who brings chava, yechavedas. She educates. She teaches the children. She starts them off, right? So that they will grow into something wonderful. He has this appreciation, so then it's obviously going to be the question, so what? Why the chait have to come in the middle of all of that? But it's all part of the process, starts here and ends with the naming of Chava. It's understanding what makes this a nefesh chaya, what makes that a nefesh chaya. Okay, so let's come back. The position of the term nefesh chaya shows that it is to be taken as being in opposition to ha'adam, to the man. Man gives things names. So why didn't Hashem bring each animal and say, see this? This is a kof. Because the name of the thing, right, the name of something, the Hebrew name of something, the Lashon Kodesh name of something, is an expression that tells you about the spiritual reality of the thing. So how come Hashem didn't say, see that? That's a kof. See that? That's an aryeh. You see that? That's a dove. You see this? This is a kelef. That should have been the education of Adam. Instead, he has to look at the animal and understand what its name is. Let's try and understand why. Man gives things names, not as God, who sees things objectively as they truly are. Right, Rahami, that's sort of your question about what I'm saying be the truth? Because Hashem is the one who sees things as they truly are. Right? But as nefesh chaya, subjectively, from his own point of view, as a nefesh, an individual, chaya, who receives acceptable or rejectable impression of the things about him. It's an interesting definition of chaya, meaning one who has chush, like one who senses things. It's interesting. It also, it is according to the impression they make on him that he gives things names. That's what this pasuk says. This pasuk says, Hashem brought the animals, and according to what he saw about them, he named them. That's what it says. That's our process of learning. When we really learn about something, we learn it and we name it. We say, okay, so this thing, this is the one that's in the front, that's the one in the back. This is the front one, this is the back one. There's always the classic Israeli example, the back axle of a car is called back axle. The front axle is the back axle kidmi. Okay? This is that's perhaps not a super accurate, although it has its pluses. It helps you understand the relationship between the axles, I suppose. Okay. In these names, he expresses... So when Adam gives a name to the animal, what he is saying is the impression which his imagination forms of things. Now, when the Torah gives us the name, the words and the names of things, that's objective. That is Hashem, who sees things objectively as they truly are, telling us about how things truly are, right? But that's not what this pasuk is talking about. This pasuk is talking about Hashem bringing all the animals in front of Adam and Adam naming them. Yeah.
Basically, it has to do with that. It was what we were learning before about like the way people perceive knowledge, like as children, also has to do with this. But basically, I teach an art. I like help out in an art class, and I teach like little kids. And basically, there was one time where we had them like drawing these pictures of swans, but like we didn't give them any instructions at all. So like you walked around, and we saw like one kid was just drawing like the shapes. Like she saw a circle, so she drew a circle. Another kid was taking paint and just drawing the colors. Another kid just like started drawing like lines, and it was all about like the way that they saw the like we were saying about like the entities and the boundaries. And like also they're saying like the way that your imagination for isn't really interesting.
It is interesting.
It is so interesting.
People, yeah, I mean, we eat, okay, this it fits in with everything. You'll see. Maybe not today, but you'll see. Or maybe you will see, depends how far you get. Okay. In these names, he expresses the impression which his imagination, it doesn't mean here creative like embellishment. He means over here like what he said over here, the mind. That mirroring of reality in the mind, which his imagination forms of things, okay? Because that's what your brain does. It has to put together a picture that is what you use and provide it to your cognitive consciousness based on what the information is coming in. And thereby he indicates their shum, their place in his world, hence the word shame. He's saying shum and shame are related. Shame is the place of a thing in the world, like,
oh, that is so
spiritually, like, yeah, and it, the shame is the shum, like where what it is doing over here. Yeah. Okay. Ranks them in the appropriate kind, species, etc. of things. So if Shem brings all these animals, they say, oh, all these ones are furry, right? All these ones give milk, all these ones lay eggs, like this. There's a whole understanding about it that he has to understand to see the differences and the similarities. What are the groupings? What are the categories? What, these are bigger, these are smaller, these are these colors, these are those colors. All of these things have to be part of it. Now, Adam is not the same as us. Why? Adam is all of humanity in one person. And he's a giant physically and spiritually. Right? Adam could see from the beginning of the world to the end of the world. Adam, the light coming out of his heel after he was dead was brighter than the sun. It's not that we're comparing ourselves to him. On the other hand, we are in fact the immediate descendants. We are little pieces, chips off the old block, they call people sometimes, right? Like we are, so there's something we got to know about ourselves from him. But it's not that we're saying like, oh, any of us could just look, go to the zoo and look at the animals and figure out like all this stuff about them as much as Adam did. That's also not so. All our knowledge of things is such a name giving. Okay, but let's do one more sentence and then we'll stop there and we'll continue on this topic. But this knowledge is only subjective. It's only asher yikra lo ha'adam nefesh chaya, how a man calls things for himself, lo, what they are to him as a nefesh chaya, as a finite living creation that receives its impressions from the outside to the inside and has to make sense of that. Okay? So that's what we're up to, and Ritz Hashem will continue next time.
Well, wouldn't you say justice in of what it is has to be objective? Like, I see, like, you could say, like, naming something.
That's what I said for the moment, because I think I'm with you on this. Is this, I said, let's use for now, what does the halacha say I should do? So that is objective, right? It might involve also who I am and what the situation is. So there may be like other elements to it than that. But I think for the moment, it's a working model. Because I don't have the answer. I don't know.
Okay. how they go together with putting, making truth out of what
yeah, so see. That will, we're going to have, because we have to come to understand this, and Baz Hashem will come back into this on understanding what he's saying about, remember, this reproduction of reality in the mind is truth. Well, what? So over here, I think, is where he explains about that a little bit. That's why I brought this. Okay?
It's so interesting. Learning something is, everything comes to so much. Learning a child development class.
Yeah.
Very similar things about this. And it's just amazing. It's, haha, it's not psychology. It's the Torah. It's exactly
much better than psychology.
Oh my gosh, much better.
Actually, if you really want to know about child development, you go find Rav Hirsch on education. Is many, is this something he thought about very, very, very deeply?
The class of, like, I don't know, past 5-6 classes, you could just put in one sentence.
Yeah.
That.
That's one sentence. I don't know how it does.
All our knowledge of things of name giving. That's our whole thing. She's talking about everything.
Maybe don't tell her.
Show her the source.
Her depends who the teacher
so
is.
It would be so cool if you could learn child development and psychology, like, from.
You could. I'm saying technically,
no,
you can.
Like,
but he really speaks. He talks about it for. He talks about it for education. He started a school. His whole thing was to create education for the young people, so that they would have a proper education. Like, and he talks about the role of mothers. And I was thinking it would be fun to do some of that after Pesach, like about being a, like your job as a mom. Like, what that has to. How do you nurture the family in that way and whatever? I would like to. I'm not. I don't know all of it.
You know, it's okay.
It's okay. Whatever piece you do. Parenting class, no, but we could learn a little bit about education from Rav Hirsch. We could see a little of what Rav Hirsch says about it. But Bez is Hashem, you have a whole life, and it's Hashem has long lives to be able to learn.
Yeah.
No, he does. He talks about at different stages, like what babies need to learn from their mom, like from their mommies, you know? Like, what do they have to know? Yeah, later they'll go into school or into a yeshiva or something, but. It all starts at the beginning. Like, it's very important what's happening at the beginning. That's how you get set on your way. All right. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Pleasure. Always to see you.